Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 2, Episode 2, Morty Night Run. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Morty has moral qualms with Rick selling weapons to an assassin on a no-questions-asked, cash-money basis. Deciding he wants to stop the murder from taking place, he rescues a gaseous being with powerful telepathic and transmutic properties that was marked for death. In doing so, he is responsible for the deaths of hundreds, if not thousands, of Federation and Gear World citizens, and almost the extinction of all sentient carbon-based life in the galaxy. In the end, Morty is forced to kill the cloud being to prevent a galactic genocide. Meanwhile, Jerry has stowed along for this adventure, but Rick wants to ditch him when things heat up. Enter the Jerry Baree, a romper room-inspired daycare center for Ricks to stash unwanted Jerrys for an afternoon or the rest of their natural lifespans, whichever is most convenient. Jerry is forced to reconcile his feelings of humiliation and inadequacy with the very real feelings of comfort and security that Jerry Baree provides.
All right, Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
I think this episode is funny. It provokes a lot of thoughts on, you know, concepts like nihilism. It's got some beautiful animation sequences. It introduces the concept of the Jerry Baree. What's not like to like? I even like some of the smaller moments where Rick's teaching Morty how to drive and Jerry's in the back seat and Jerry pipes up randomly and Rick's like, whoa, Jesus, Jerry. Like, it's, he completely forgot that he was there.
Yeah.
And then the Jerry mix up at the end, it's another brickbat of an episode to Jerry and the concept of Jerry.
Yep.
But yeah, there's definitely things I want to talk about when it comes to Jerry. What'd you think of the episode?
Yeah, I think it's the funniest of the season, which is to say a little bit funnier than the previous one.
Right.
Now that we're in episode two. This season so far, I should say. Yeah, I really enjoy this one. I think the way that they've integrated these musical sequences into the episode, it sort of works perfectly with the fart character because it's a telepathic character.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gets inside your head and it kind of makes you feel like this is the only thing going on. Same with kind of that video game that they're playing. And I felt myself like falling into that when I was watching these scenes, and Jemaine Clement is so good.
Yeah.
But when I was watching these musical scenes, when Rick snaps Morty out, he's snapping me out too.
Right.
Cause
right.
I'm in the zone, man, watching this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so trippy and cool. And then it just like, of course the lowbrow humor is there. Like Rick's fart joke at the end. I loved it. I laughed out loud. Yeah, really funny one. And like you said, there's something else here. There's more to it than that. And of course, Jerry as a punching bag is always fun.
Yeah. Something I wanted to get into, like the deeper discussion, is the, what I would call, again, nihilism that kind of is victorious over Morty's kind of naive optimism. And the show uses that as kind of like two foils. Like Rick is this cynical pragmatist nihilist, and Morty is just, you know, like I said, a neat naive optimist. You know, a part of me wants to say that's part of what makes the show funny. This is kind of like a black humor. It's not, you know, really intended in that kind of commentary, but we're literally paid to tear these things apart and examine them in minute detail. So why not? What is the, on a galactic scale, what is the argument against just apathy? What is the argument for just like sitting there? If you find something that can divert you for a few seconds of this life and give you happiness, like Roy, or like sitting next to a big head mascot version of your wife on the couch, mm-hmm. What? Give me a logical argument against that.
I think the only thing I can come up with is the societal one, like the abject misery of everybody working for their own interests all the time, and the life that would create for everyone involved, except for maybe a lucky handful of people, is just so terrifying and so horrible that I couldn't imagine living in that world, that universe, you know?
Because what happens when someone takes away your Roy game?
Yeah. Yeah, and like you said, those moments I think would be fleeting in a universe set up like that. So Yeah, I think there's a logical argument to be made that doing things in a certain way, in a more organized and sensible fashion, makes everyone's experience here better, including your own, or has the potential to. Certainly, it increases the odds of you having a better experience overall.
But you can also just fuck things up royally by trying, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, that is the story of this episode,
you're
certainly
feeling actual guilt over the times you fucked up versus mm-hmm. the theoretical guilt for not fulfilling your duties due to societal compact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, that's what this episode deals with. I feel like, I don't know, nihilism is a tough thing because I think nihilism is a pretty correct way to view the universe.
It's the way the universe doesn't give a shit. For sure. Like right. Whoever was configuring the seed world in this particular version of Minecraft definitely went heavy on the nihilism. There doesn't appear to be any purpose.
So I just gotta dig till I hit obsidian? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Until the creeper eventually comes and blows your ass up.
Cool.
Everything you've worked on.
That's a pretty straightforward mission statement.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it's almost like the optimists are breaking the game. They're like playing outside. They found the way to exploit the game to derive an artificial meaning from it. But I guess that's the argument against nihilism, is that it seems like the way we were randomly created by this unfeeling cold universe and the way we evolved makes us happier when we work together mm-hmm. for you know, common shared happiness rather than maximizing our individual self-interest.
Yeah, because I mean, if nobody worked together, we wouldn't have the society we live in today. And granted, that's working better for some people than others.
Yeah,
but I think ultimately it's working, you know, at least a minimum level of good for everyone. Like yeah. the idea that you have running water and electricity
yeah.
makes your life 100 times easier
yeah.
every single day. And we wouldn't have those things if we didn't work together.
Yeah. I mean, but it's tough because you're not going to look through a microscope and see that inscribed on an atom.
Sure.
You know, there's yeah. like not a universal cooperation field that we're going to discover. It's like, oh, well, of course. It's almost like,
that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's tough because, you know, there's a lot of moral hazard to that. Like, everybody works together and maximizes everyone's, like, common interest, then the loophole there is there will always probably be people like Rick's that mm-hmm. come and be like, oh, well, if you fucking idiots, you sheep are going to do this for me anyway,
yeah.
then I'll do nothing because there's no penalty for it.
Sure.
The only penalty for doing nothing arises when, like, a certain percentage of the population all do that and then the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah, so as long as you get in the game early.
Yeah.
The doing nothing game early, you're pretty
yeah.
good.
Go off the grid. Yeah.
There you go.
Let's tear up that social security card.
Yeah.
That's the only way.
Hope you don't like running off. Water and electricity.
Take this thing off. Yeah, exactly. I think that is pretty funny, the whole concept of Roy and how Morty mm-hmm. plays it just as a straightforward person. And, oh, man, the confusion as he steps out of there. It's like, oh, my God, where's my wife? Where's my child? And
who am I?
Yeah, and Rick just immediately goes in and starts, you know, trying to power, you know, he's playing like a min-maxer in D&D, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I find myself getting, like, really wrapped up in that game, too. Mm-hmm. Like, when they go for, you know, 2 minutes inside the game, I start to forget that this isn't just the episode that I'm going to be watching for the next half hour.
Yeah, yeah, it's so, man, those type of fantasies are so compelling, because, like, I tend to play video games more or less as a paladin. I don't like playing evil plots out, but I'd be lying if I said I never made a save in Skyrim just to fuck a town up.
Yeah,
and then I'm going to undo that so I could be the good guy again.
Of course.
But it was fun. It was fun fuss rotoring all the things.
Speaking of gaming and fucking shit up.
Mm-hmm.
This Crumbopulous Michael Sam Fishering everybody
so cool
on his way into this facility yeah. is awesome.
Yeah, and I love how, like, it's this show is so great at doing, like, dualities of characters, because Crumbopulous Michael is kind of like, hey, you know, he's very friendly and
yeah,
he's got this elaborate, looks like spiritual routine he does, and then he takes out his little locket that has his wife and he wraps it up carefully and kisses it, and then it's like. You know, almost like this, like, yeah, like you could see like Worf doing something like this in Star Trek, this very noble character. And then he stands up and says, like, oh boy, time to kill again. And he's just so fucking good at it. Like the one I love the best is when he like laser cuts a thing under the floor. You think he's going to break into something, but it's just to drop a guy into his headlock so he can snap his neck.
Yeah, it's great.
It's pretty funny. But yeah, Kermopolis Michael is interdimensional Sam Fisher. What is it about Rick that he doesn't seem like he's ashamed of his worldview and he thinks it's a logical outcome, but he's still extremely defensive. Like anytime Morty's like, oh, I don't know, Grandpa, we're meeting in this shady garage. He goes on this whole tangent about accurate tangent about like, oh, what about corporate boardrooms? Like, your grandpa does his business out in the open because he's not shady. But he's meeting an assassin there to do a no questions asked deal for weapons and assassinations. Like, I mean, it's really funny, but is there anything they're suggesting beyond it? Just the Rick trying to keep up the motions and being caught up in his own lies? And
yeah, no, it's a good question considering someone with that worldview wouldn't care or shouldn't care.
Yeah.
And I think it all goes back to his relationship with Morty. Like, you know, everything that Rick says, he believes to some degree, but he also believes other things that contradict those things or that make him incapable of fully acting on those other beliefs.
Right.
And I think his fondness for his grandson is one of those things.
Yeah. I wonder if he'll ever, like, there'll be a point where they lose that, where, like, you know, Morty will call him on the moral carpet and he'll be just like, come on, look, Morty, it's season five. What the hell do you want me to say? Like, or will Rick, you know, continue to have, like, moments like last episode where he shows self-sacrifice to where he's going to kind of be caught in his own contradiction there?
It's a good question, and I couldn't help but in this episode look at Rick's actions and question whether or not he's becoming meaner. Is Rick becoming more of an asshole? Because every time I see Rick and Morty interacting in this episode, Morty does or says something that proves Rick, you know, Rick's worldview is kind of shitty.
Right.
And then Rick comes back and is like, he's sort of like gives Morty that point. But then he comes back and he calls him like a motherfucker and like really lays into him hard this episode.
Yeah.
Just calling him like stupid and I don't know, fart saving carpet store motherfucker, like hilarious stuff, but very mean, very angry stuff. And that's not something I remember seeing a ton from Rick.
I wonder if it's because it's really hitting him close to, like, he knows he's got, I got no defense other than to the appeal of the void on this one.
Right.
And it's making me mad. It's making me uncomfortable. You know, it's like, I could see it would be kind of a terrifying tightrope to see yourself on if you're writing a character like Rick, because, you know, like, we both like Better Call Saul. It's about a guy who, it's a prequel to a guy who we know ends up being a pretty terrible, amoral person.
Yeah.
But he starts off, you know, pretty likable, you know, wrong side of the tracks kind of story. One of the few complaints I have about the show is that, like, it does seem like at the end of each season, they want to have a mini arc of him becoming an asshole, and then they retcon it, or they steer him back because, like, oh, we're not, you know, once Jimmy becomes Saul, story's over.
Right.
So we need to force him back. And I wonder, because the way that this stuff is going on in Rick and Morty feels like a lot more natural and more organic and just kind of relationship-oriented. And one of the things, you know, you see in relationships and people that are going through recovery process is it's not like you go from like, oh, I'm rock bottom, and then you climb up to the peak of the mountain, right? Mm-hmm. You fall back down into the valleys. So there's like a built-in way for Rick to kind of, and Morty himself, to kind of like pendulum back and forth between moral gray zones and not like, it'd be still defensible. Because like, well, yeah, Rick said this and this, but like he's under this type of pressure in this episode, and that's a trigger for him.
Sure.
You could see 10 seasons of that.
Yeah, especially with characters that don't age and all that stuff.
Right, like, it's like have all the emotional resonant realism and relationship developments, but none of the aging or any of the changing careers or places you live or things like that.
Yeah, and I think importantly, like, these characters are simply vessels for the writers to tell their stories, right?
Yeah.
And so if they want to tell a whole lot of different stories, because these people are, you know, nuanced, real human beings, they can't just have this one phase of growth. They need to have multiple phases. Like you're talking about those valleys you fall back into. That strikes me as incredibly real.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I appreciate this show so much.
You know, the other thing is, like, aside from falling in the valley, there's also times I think that you climb a peak that you really can't sustain.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you're like, I'm going to sell all my worldly possessions and meditate on top of a mountain about world peace.
God damn, it's cold up here.
And, yeah, you're 6 months into it, and it's like, God damn it, I'm going to kill myself if I... If I have to chant one more whatever they are. So it's like there's also that where like you have to find your own, like, what is a level of commitment to self and society that you can sustain over a long period of time, because otherwise it's kind of like fad dieting. It's actually unhealthier in the long term to swing between two big weight extremes than to just find, okay, here's the part where I'm not an asshole, but maybe I'm not a fucking saint either.
Yeah. And I feel like that isn't often glorified in media.
Yeah. You know, it's finding your place.
Right. Especially when you look at shorter form stuff like movies, you'll always see the character just kind of go from rock bottom to living on top of the world. And maybe if it's a certain structure, they'll hit rock bottom again at the end.
Right. Yeah.
Or very close to it. But yeah, those compressed stories kind of encourage us to think in those terms, and that's not how people work.
Yeah, it's not a strictly linear process. Do you want to talk about the Jamboree or the Jerry-boree?
Jerry-boree, yeah, let's do it.
There's a lot of really funny things in the minutiae here. Like if you freeze on the drop off form, there's an option to drop off like forever.
Oh, I did. Yeah, it was great.
And documenting physical damage that Rick had just literally shaded out Jerry's entire head, which could imply that he's just busted up.
Yeah,
in the looks department, he's busted up in the brains department. But I feel like that you can almost say I kind of hit on something in the synopsis where I said that he's caught between his feelings of humiliation and inadequacy and also the realization that, like, damn, this life, this is kind of set up for me to be as happy as I can possibly be. I'm getting all of my needs met except for maybe the illusory feeling of freedom, and I try that, and it's like, oof. Ignorance is bliss.
No, I found it funny that Jerry couldn't deal with Rick's every day. Like, he walks out into this world, and there are crazy aliens, and people approaching him in the streets and exploding, and Jerry immediately turns around, tucks his tail, whereas that's just Rick's every day.
Sure.
The other thing on the form, the reason for drop-off, I have to question. There are four options: Earth under siege, threatened to tell Beth, unwanted stowaway, and annoying me. I have to wonder if annoying me ever goes unchecked.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's every time.
It's always Cormund with all the other things, too, yeah.
Yeah, it should just come with a check, with it pre-checked.
Yeah. the other UI tweak would be like, why have it at all if it's a universal option?
Yeah.
I think that it's interesting because I was watching this, and I'm like, geez, how can you defend any kind of like Jerry defense? How can you mount any kind of Jerry defense with an episode like this? And I was thinking that the one thing is this is a filter that negatively selects the most submissive, weak, security-seeking Jerrys, right?
That's true. You
like,
don't
the Jerry
the
is Jerry blows out that door and's like, you know what? I'm not going to get freaked out by every little sound I hear in the night. I'm not going to, like, be weirded out. I'm going to put my... I can fucking figure this out. It's the same kind of, like, Jerry that finds a backbone and a shotgun and can kill his way through Cronenberg wasteland. Like,
yeah.
But it does say that our Jerry probably is not the Jerriest of Jerry.
No, we could have a whole debate on the Jerriest Jerry.
yeah, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
Right, Jerriest Jerry might just be our Jerry, except because of who he is, because he's not able to stand up to Rick, because he's so insecure.
Right.
That's Jerry to me, so that's my Jerriest Jerry. But yeah, you're right, that certainly pigeonholes our Jerry.
Yeah. It's funny because there's a lot of things that, like, I think that's the interesting thing about Jerry is that most people can relate to a little bit of his, like, who doesn't have one of these, you know, one of the many quirks that Jerry has displayed. Like, the one that resonated with me is the factory tent settings. Like, that, you know, he gets to run in. Like, the Beth says, hey, who wants to watch Morty or Midnight Run with the commentary track on? And the first one that gets to the couch gets to set the tint set, or gets to fuck with the television settings. And he's like, oh, the factory tint setting's always too high. And then there's, like, you know, gangs of Jerry's trying to figure out the HDMI cable situation. Uh-huh. And, like, it's, I guess it's just like if you relate to everything in Jerry's life, that's when you might want to talk to somebody.
Yeah, you're not a functioning person at that point.
Just tell me I'm not a full-on Jerry. That's what I want to hear.
I have seen you plug in an HDMI cable, sir.
Thank you. Several.
You
sometimes
had no trouble.
All right. So there's at least one thing.
Can I ask you about this? So when he goes to the basement,
uh-huh,
and there all the Jerrys are playing poker.
The abandoned Jerrys, yeah.
Yeah, there is a Hungry for Apples sign in the background. What possible purpose in this place could that serve? It is simply a reminder of his failure.
So that's the okay. I actually had this as a bullet point I wanted to talk about.
Okay, thank you. It's
because
confusing to me.
There's a lot of ways I could talk about this, and I think they're all partially true, but like one of them is, okay, this is not like an independent Jerry zone. This is essentially Zion from the Matrix.
Okay.
The Ricks knew that there would be a few Jerrys that wouldn't accept the simulation, so we give them this rat hole, poker, seedy existence so they can feel like badasses, but obviously going outside is too much of a hassle. Who needs this? But I don't need my fucking big head Beth, okay?
Yeah. So there's don't patronize me.
There's one. And if that's true, it's also funny that even in this zone that, like, Rick can't – it's like he's either putting that to intentionally remind Jerry of his greatest failure, mm-hmm, or maybe Rick gets so little thought that he just thinks, oh, that's a thing that Jerry's really excited about. So, like
– oh, God, that's even worse somehow.
Yeah, right? That you're so oblivious to, like, his emotional needs and desires that you would think that that was, like, a comforting thing or
– man.
But then again, it's like the joke there is that look around at the Jerry Buree. There is no level of condescension that a Jerry won't accept to get that security and comfort.
It's true.
So, it's true. Like, that's why I went on a real mental hamster wheel about, like, oh, my God, where's the floor to the disgustingness in which Jerry is being submitted to?
I don't even think we could see it yet, which is... it was so promising. I'm so happy about that.
And I love that, like, also it says, there's also something that says about Beth that when she remarries to a Paul Fleischman, who, mm-hmm, I guess there's nothing wrong with Paul. He's saying all the right things.
Mm-hmm.
He's almost sounds like what a Jerry would say in that circumstance.
Clearly Rick doesn't like him still because he's been dropped off at the Jerry Buree, so...
Mm-hmm.
Although there's just one of him.
I bet Morty and Summer hate him. Because he's trying to be their friend, not their dad. They need a dad, not a friend.
Yeah.
Doesn't Paul realize that?
Yeah, he talks about it. He says, you know, they need a dad, but no one can replace you, Jerry.
Right. But isn't that's other, like, another kind of fuck you to Jerry that, like, Rick doesn't even bother to have separate lands for, it's like, oh, well, you know, Jerry's not going to mind that in some other dimensions that Beth has moved on. And
Could he be a plant? Could he be there to tell Jerry what he wants to hear, to patronize Jerry more? Like, oh, you know, no one can replace you, Jerry. You know, I'm not a stand-in for you.
Oh, my God. That would go in with the Zion theory because, like, you want these Ricks that are or these Jerrys that are abandoned to accept their fate, and it's better if they know that, oh, look, I've met Paul and guys like him. That's not so bad. I'm not a coward for abandoning my family at a daycare center that I can leave at any time. I just, you know, they're better off.
Yeah, they'll find someone like Paul.
Wow, we just hit another level. we just went one level deeper, man.
AKA reading too much into it.
And then finally, the cherry on this Jerry humiliation cake is the end joke where it literally doesn't matter what Jerry you come home with, at least from Rick's point. Like, Morty kind of protests and Jerry kind of protests, but Rick says, eh, whatever. And maybe we've got the Jerry that we were supposed to get and maybe we don't.
Yeah. And I think this opens up potential. You can sort of now chalk up any inconsistencies in Jerry's character to Yeah, maybe we don't have the right Jerry, you know? That's not our Jerry. Of course he's acting different.
Right. It's another, like this show's already like a 747 cockpit of these things, but it's another lever that the writers could switch at any time to recontextualize our relationship with Jerry. Yeah, there's a lot of them switches in motion. There's a couple other things that I wanted to talk about. I really particularly liked Rick ripping the gear stickles off of Gearhead and putting him in his mouth.
Oh my
and
god!
And then the Gear cop's reaction to that.
Yep.
And how there's all the just like the they had this box of twigs. It's kind of like our universe's version of like pocket sand. You know, like it's. It might be in an industrial capacity useful, but like it's just twigs and it's like it's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
And then finally, in researching this episode, I found that one of the big influences of the animation sequences was this illustrator by the name of Vince Collins. And he's got two videos in particular on his website on YouTube or his YouTube channel. Malice in Wonderland and Life is Flashing Before Your Eyes. I'm going to link both of those in the show notes. Malice in Wonderland particularly is very not safe for work.
Yep.
You
Does
know,
that big boob anime ladies in it? Is that it, what's
no,
happening?
No, it's just a lot of like, I mean, kids, if you want to know what overdosing on mushrooms feels like, this video is pretty close to it because it's just a whole bunch of very vivid imagery of body parts morphing, and it says a lot of things interesting about human sexuality and probably consumer culture. But mostly it's just really trippy, and it's just like 5 minutes of like jaw-dropping. But yeah, probably don't watch it in your cubicle. Okay. It's not so much the nudity and the vaginas morphing into breasts and mouths and stuff. It's just the, you know, like I feel like you're going to want to watch that video and then smash a McDonald's window or something.
Okay.
That's why it's not safe for work. It's anti-establishment. It's not the graphic sexual
subversive
imagery.
And everything is one in the beauty. And now we say goodbye. Goodbye, Moon Man. Goodbye, Moon Man. Goodbye, Moon Man. Oh, goodbye.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret, Hush Hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
All right, Jim, do we dare to get our portal guns out and go plot to the future?
Yeah, why not?
Where we open up our portals to Dimension BM77 to access behind-the-scenes details, trivia, and spoilers for future episodes. I remind you, this is not shtick. This is just a nice, safe bumper to eject all you people that don't want to hear potential spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Portal open. What do you got?
I agree with Dan. This tag is not very good on this episode.
Honestly, get rid of this tag and just have the mix, the Jerry mix up.
Yeah.
And then I guess you'd have to find 30 seconds to blow up an episode. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, Blips and Chits ad not doing it for me.
I don't want to, but you know, like, obviously it's like the first thing they said is like, well, it's, you know, they were short on time.
Yeah.
So it's like, this wasn't the greatest idea, but like, who's got three more days to come up with a better one? Nobody. All right. We're shipping this one. I want something that they thought, that something that they discussed on the commentaries on the Blu-rays that I thought was fascinating is the question, why is Earth culture so popular?
Okay.
Isn't that kind of a neat, like... But there's also, you could ask the same question about, like, why, you know, if you watch a movie like The Matrix, you know, it's made in America, like, why is Asian culture so popular?
I've got an answer for you.
Yeah? Is it cultural appropriation? And it's super profitable?
Oh, there's a lot of that. A lot of that. But in this specific scenario, it's because Rick is the most intelligent person in the universe.
Oh, shit.
And everybody wants what he has, and he has Earth culture.
Ah, see, I thought you were going for like that trope of super intelligent aliens that seed the galaxy with life just because they, you know, are bored and they want to.
Rick was created. Rick was created by Ra. Is that what you're saying?
No, I was going to say that Rick, you know, as the greatest intellect, has seeded the galaxy with Earth culture so that he, everywhere he goes, there'll be a radio station he can listen to or a TV station that's accessible to him.
That I wouldn't put it past him.
That's why he finds all – it's not a coincidence he finds so much of interdimensional cable fascinating, because he made sure that was in all intelligent life's DNA. That, like, this, I'm really fascinated with those primates on Earth, man. I can't get enough of them.
Yeah.
So endlessly fascinating. I also really liked the – I wish they had done it. The original pitch for Roy – which is, they were actually, instead of having, you know, Rick smiling smugly as people are just remarking on the crazy anarchist things he's doing, they were going to have Rick put on the helmet, he wake up as a little boy, and his mom says, oh, sweetie, did you have a nightmare? And he just immediately cold cocks the mom, starts throwing Molotov cocktails and, like, burning the world down. And they were afraid that that would be a little... like little Columbine-y they mentioned.
Yeah, yeah, I could see it.
But it's super funny. Like,
it is, yeah.
The idea of, like, you saw Morty doing it, and then... But it's also pretty funny just to see Rick plugged in and everyone just amazed at what he's doing in the game. So I like that.
They wanted to have David Bowie play Fart.
Yeah.
Which would have been an amazing choice as well.
And makes total sense. Like, and you got the second best thing, Jemaine Clements doing a, you know, inspired kind of David Bowie impersonation, which he's really good at. Does he do this a lot on Flight of the Conchords? Because this is his shtick in Moana, too.
Yeah, I mean, Flight of the Conchords is essentially just a series of Flight of the Conchords, Jemaine and Britt songs, musical numbers with, you know, some comedy pieces between them. Tying them all together.
He just did a rap battle with an evil entity in last week's episode of Legion.
All right. That sounds good. How's his rap game? Because I know his Bowie-alike is pretty good. But
I got to say, I talked about this in the podcast we did with Jason over at Podcastica and Rima. Little dad rappy.
Yeah, I could see it.
But that might be maybe he wasn't allowed to write his own verses.
Sure.
It's Noah Hawley. Noah Hawley's the dad rapper. I got no problems with Jermaine Clement. But no, he's really good. He's really fun. And it's a bummer because apparently like the thing that got out from the David Bowie camp is that he was like kind of too sick to do it. And
yeah, it could have been.
That's a bummer. Because they were like, you know, obviously they didn't want to talk about like, you know, it'd be a slam dunk. But I kind of think David Bowie would think the show was cool.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, shit, he was in Zoolander. Which I'm not even saying that as an insult. I'm just saying the man has an intact sense of humor about himself, his place in pop culture, the fact that it's inherently kind of a funny, absurd existence, but he's also cool enough to completely operate unironically.
Yeah.
And what a dude. There's a couple of just random facts that, you know, I feel like you have to point out or people get mad. There's a Mr. Meeseeks wandering around the Blitz and Chips. Helping apparently an alien.
A lot of cameos.
Try to beat the game, and then when he does, he disappears. There's also in the background music of the Jerry Daycare, the human music song from the, what was that? The M. Shyamalan aliens?
Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan.
Shyamalan's episode. So I thought that's like, you know, it's so weird because it's the same thing with like the How About Them Apples campaign or Hungry for Apples campaign. Is the what happened in the simulated reality like some kind of universal thing, or
it seems like maybe the starting point is like you're just playing as this character in the world they give you, and then what you do from there is up to you.
Yeah, Rick said that the Jerry Baree was his idea that he essentially licensed to somebody else who made all the money, so maybe that explains why there's a lot of things that seem important to Jerry Prime, our Prime Jerry, or I guess we should call him Jerry Prime. Alternate dimension or replacement dimension Jerry. A lot of the experiences the C-137 Rick has with Jerry informed this, and that makes sense.
The one thing that really surprised me, I guess, in this commentary is Dan's evolving relationship with the fandom. Because in this episode, very much in season one, I got the impression that it was sort of contentious. Like Dan, you know, had some problems with the way people interpreted what he meant to be ironic. Just kind of ran with it, that stuff. But in this commentary, he tells fans, go wild, obsess. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. He's not going to judge you for it. He seems to have come to some peace.
That might be one of them there pendulum things, Jim.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm waiting for the valley.
Yeah,
where he says, you know what, fuck you guys.
Yeah, but, I mean, I got like 1/100th, 1/1000th the public pressure, but like every once in a while I'll feel like, oh yeah, you know, go nuts with the criticism. You know, it's like I want people to be able to tell me, and then there's others just like, fucking go away, shut up, leave me alone. So speaking of the fans going wild, a lot of people made a lot of theories based on the Jerry's getting switched at the end of this episode.
Okay.
And they hang a lot of this on the fact that, you know, since we're in the spoiler section, we can talk about future episodes. There is a connection in this episode to the parasite episodes, the psychic parasite episodes. What was that, Total Recall? Episode where all the Mr. Poopy Butthole comes out. In this episode, Rick picks up a bunch of rocks, green rocks with these like purple things on them that he then dumps into a trash can in the episode of the parasites. And they kind of look like the things that are coming out of the parasite's mouth. So a lot of people are making the connection between, oh, look, you know, even though Rick gives Summer a bunch of shit for the pink eye, obviously it's Rick to track the stuff back in. Okay, so put a pin in that. So the other part of this theory hinges on the fact that Rick gets handed this ticket, 5126, and it becomes important to the plot later because the Rick that comes up to our Rick and Morty with Jerry says, hey, do you have 5126? And Rick kind of shrugs and they switch. A lot of people point that that's significant because there's a lot of effort being expended in the animation to show that the receptionist person handed Rick this ticket that says 5126. And the theory is that this is like some kind of, you know, intergalactic cloakroom where you've got a ticket and it's attached to your, you know, item, presumably a Jerry, and you get this ticket and they match, right? And they're saying like that he knew that Rick was given the wrong ticket and was trying to switch things back. And then they fold that in with the connection this has with the Parasite episode and the fact that Mr. Poopy Butthole in that episode is portrayed as an old family friend. In fact, he's even in the opening credit sequence. Yet, we have never seen Mr. Poopy Butthole before.
Mm-hmm.
And the theory is that when the Rick and Morty came up and said, do you have Jerry 5126, was our Rick and Morty, and we switched POVs to this other dimensional Rick and Morty with that Jerry that actually did have Mr. Poopy Butthole as a friend. Mm-hmm. And the entire, I presumably, rest of the series from that point, we've switched this POV. And there's a couple other follow-on theories that had, like, you know, this is going to be a way to bring Cromobulus Michael back so that he can break Rick out of the intergalactic prison he finds himself in. Obviously, those things are wrong, but I think the latest version is this is just something they got in their back pocket if they ever want to hit the reset button. Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those unfalsifiable theories, right? The ones that are just, like, a lot of speculation, not a lot of actual evidence to point to.
I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with this theory.
No.
It's just more of like, why? Like, this is literally like if Saint Elsewhere ended with the kid shaking the snow globe at the hospital, and then the mm-hmm. camera zoomed in on the hospital and started another entire series of Saint Elsewhere set inside that snow globe. So that presumably at a certain period of time, they can zoom back out and resume. Like,
you'd have to have a really good hook you're setting up.
Yeah, because, you know, when they switch this early in season two, like the Rick and Mortys that we've been watching for the last essentially two seasons are the Rick and Mortys we've established a relationship with. And like, there's not enough logical trickery in the whole world to like. Make you're right. There's obviously storylines they could do or some kind of unification thing that might be interesting and
but
worth
it would
it.
Have to be so fucking interesting.
It would have to be
to
so fucking interesting and next level. Which that's the thing is like this show is certainly capable of being that ambitious, but come on, that's a really absurdly high bar to set for the show.
I agree. And listening to the commentary tracks on these episodes, I never get the impression that they go out of their way to do that kind of stuff. Like, this show is certainly clever, but it tends to show you how clever it is, not hide how clever it is until some nebulous time in the future where it's going to all be revealed.
Right.
It kind of does a thing and lets you know it's doing a thing. And I appreciate that. You know, there are certainly shows I like to theorize on.
Mm-hmm. This is one of them.
This is quickly becoming one of them. But I never get the impression from the writers that they're doing that sort of thing.
Yeah. Because that's like fucking with your... It's fucking with your point of view. It's fucking with your emotions and how you feel about the characters.
And I think that's
the engine that makes this show run above all else.
That's a dangerous game to play.
Yes.
And I don't know if they want to play that game.
So we're out on the secret ticket theory. To me, what happened is that other dimensions Rick has a Jerry that has a 5126 stamped on him. Mm-hmm. And he's asking, he's just heads up the other Rick, like, yo, you've got the wrong Jerry.
Yeah.
And then the joke is that the Ricks don't really care. And
the
Mortys and
the
Jerrys
joke.
Are oddly kind of like, if they care, it's not to the extent that they're going to hassle Rick about it.
They know it's not going to have any effect anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
so
Rick can do what he wants.
It's not anything more than that. But like I said,
also, this isn't an episode where I just pointed out how Dan's relationship with the fans has evolved. And he's mm-hmm. like, oh, yeah, theorize all you want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Could that be something sly that he's doing to get fans to acknowledge or recognize that there's something else in there? That's ascribing a total next level kind of move.
Sure.
Not out of his realm of possibility, sure. Certainly, but damn, if that's the case, and in season four we come in and there's some mind-blowing reveal about the POV on this Rick is not real, and here's the real one, and we're gonna unify him somehow. Kudos to him, but I don't see it.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I've certainly seen that kind of story, like, take place in the world of comic books before, like, when Marvel kind of runs out of ideas to do things.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost universally seen as bad. You know, like, yeah, maybe fans will get on board the new plot that they eventually tell, but, like, that transition is almost universally seen as, like, oh, come on.
I don't think it's comfortable storytelling.
Mm-mm.
I don't think that makes people feel good when you fool them. Like, look at Westworld Season 2, man. That shit made people feel real bad, and not because they felt too stupid. It's because they felt like they were getting jerked around the whole time.
And they were.
Yeah.
They were, to protect the secret, which, you know, that's the thing. Like, if the secret is more important than the characters...
Yep.
And the world you're building, then that seems like a shaky foundation, because first of all, your foundation goes to shit if any of the billion people on Reddit, you know, randomly typing in sequences of theories gets it right. And secondly, just because it shortcuts all the other stuff that, you know, will work despite people knowing the plot.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Ben Aaron, from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com. Get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at Bald Move. See you next time.
Shut the fuck up about Moon Men!